This is CliffCentral.com. Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Future CEOs. So they call him Mr. Cruise SA. And if it's anything to my imagination, I think it's one of the most exciting and really inclusive jobs in the world. But to tell us more about the ins and outs of being a CEO executive of Cruises International, and he is known for his honesty and integrity, and for future CEOs, that's what we're all about. Please do welcome. I think you should introduce yourself because you've got one of the surnames that I don't want to mess up. Please, George, introduce yourself to future CEOs.
My name is George Argyropoulos, and I am the CEO of Cruises International.
And is it what I imagine it to be? Tell us what your day-to-day run of the mill is. What do you do on a daily basis? What do you do? What's the first thing you do in the morning?
Being on luxury ships.
My imagination. You see future CEOs. Unpack it for us, please, George. Yes.
It's actually not as glamorous as one thinks. You know, a lot of people go into the travel industry because they want to travel, but our job is to send people traveling and not us enjoying as much as our customers should. So it's like running any other business. Yes, we have a fantastic product, which I absolutely love, and I truly believe I made it my life.
And you have, after so many years, decades in fact, right?
Yes, it's I think just over 30 years that I've been in this industry. I started by complete default.
Tell us how that happened.
Well, I finished my studies and my military career. I was born and raised in Athens in Greece.
Yes.
And a friend of mine had my father had a friend who owned the cruise line, and I always had a great affinity for the sea, and particularly yachting.
Wow. So
during my summer holidays as a student, I used to work on yachts. And he says, well, my son has finished his studies and his military service, so I know you have a fleet of yachts, and would you like him to work for you? So I started with the yachts, and then a few months later, they told me, no, I must now move to the big ships. So to my horror, I started working for the big ships and leaving the kind of glamour and fun of the yacht
space.
it had, as we just described in the other conversation, it looked shiny and nice, but suddenly it wasn't so.
Yeah, because I had exactly, and I was carrying the same misconception that a lot of people carry about cruising. Old people, expensive, boring, what do you do on a ship, all that stuff. And I was trying to avoid to go on my first cruise. They kept kind of pushing me to, you cannot be selling this product and not having had some personal experience. So eventually one day, they practically handed the suitcase in my hand and say, off you go.
Off you go.
Time to experience.
And I must tell you, it was probably one of the best weeks I have ever spent in my life. And of course, I've kept repeating it many, many times in the future, because it opened a completely new world of traveling, of exploring, and of a complete lifestyle that I had no idea existed. And yes, in those days, it was aimed at older people, the kind of entertainment and dining and activities.
How's the consumer changed from then till now, George?
Well, now a lot of our customers are going on a cruise for their honeymoon. They're going with young families, with children, and of course, they progress into becoming empty nesters and then going into different style of cruising. And of course, the industry has completely changed and revolutionized itself from, really, the ships were a means to take you to destinations. That was really the kind of basic philosophy of it. But it has changed and evolved over the years. So you have this, really, I don't even call them ships anymore. They're floating resorts.
They're floating resorts.
They really are, yeah.
So you are in a luxury resort on a full-inclusive basis, and every morning you wake up and you're fresh in a new destination that is waiting for you to explore it.
All right, so that sounds magical to us. I think we should have been in your office today and in your studio
somewhere.
We must
get an invite, as a future CEO.
Come and do a broadcast from one of our ships.
Okay, we heard it. We heard it on air. It's now recorded. So let's then now start tapping you for some of your business acumen and insights.
Yes.
And so you have this experience where the best 7 days – you could have had right in the beginning of your career. It it opens up another world for you. Talk to us about then the next few steps, the next couple of years that unfold.
Well, let me go back a bit, because really since I was a very young child, I had this burning desire to run my own business one day.
There was that thing inside of me.
I was never a corporate person. I didn't look like joining a big company and spent, 40 years of my life in there. I was a bit maybe too adventurous. What happened eventually is I worked for the company in Piraeus, in Athens, for a couple of years, and they sent me to their office in New York, which I had a wonderful 2 years there, I must say. And then they called me back to Greece. And of course, going back to Athens after spending a couple of years in New York wasn't really a kind of motivation for me. And at the same time, I had met a South African lady in New York, and we came out here for a Christmas holiday. And I fell in love with South Africa. It was, I think, January 91. And I proposed to my company that I will come to South Africa and open a marketing agency and promote all their cruises to the South African market. At the time, there wasn't any company of that description.
Innovative.
In South Africa. I mean, there was a very high standard of living. There was a high propensity to travel. The aircraft were coming and still are coming and going full.
You saw that gap.
I saw that gap, and I said, well, this is it. I'll come here, make South Africa my home, and start a business, which I did in a garage, like all great companies.
Hey. Yeah. That's the true sign of a great business legacy.
Exactly. Yeah, if you haven't started in a garage, you're likely not to take a real step up.
So were you talking about Cruising Musings? Is that what you started? Is that the publication? Tell us more about that. I just read about that.
Well, that was a newsletter that we were bringing out in the analog era.
Okay. back then, yes.
So, of course, I was talking to an almost virgin market. My target market has always been the travel agents and the travel consultants around the country. So I started with them to get to know me and trust me and place business with them, which was actually less challenging than I had expected it to be. But there were a lot of challenges at the beginning. Who are you? How do we trust you with our money? So I had to find a law firm to actually open an escrow account to accept clients' bookings and payments initially. And then, of course, with the change in the good thing is that immediately we were in business. I mean, within a few weeks, bookings were coming in and reservations.
How did you do that, though? So I'm putting myself in a person's shoes who's just started a business. They're trying to crack into a particular kind of market. In your case, it was quite fresh and, as you described, virgin in many ways. But how do you go on building trust then with people that never heard of you before, who potentially don't really want to be associated with anyone that may turn out to be a crook or something? How do you build that trust?
Well, I want to attribute it to my charming personality that people trusted me.
Okay.
Initially, I don't know, but people did. Okay. Obviously, they believed in what I said. They tried me out with a booking or two. They saw that everything went smoothly and the clients actually went on the ship and they had a great time and they came back raving about their experience.
And then they said, George is
on. And that's how it starts. I mean, I think in the first year, I probably did 100 or 150 bookings.
So okay. I don't know whether that's good or not.
It grew, it was very, very, very I wouldn't little. Be able to live on that. But to give you an idea, I mean, we closed last year with over 10,000.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, the industry has grown tremendously.
When you talk about business leadership, George, is it skills or connections and your experience that has made you successful? Or a bit of both.
To be absolutely honest, I don't think I started having neither of those two. I had zero connect. Nobody knew me from a bar of soap in South Africa. So really my day would be have one of these book maps in the old days. There were no Google Maps and all that when I started. Get in the car, had kind of predetermined an area where I had located travel agents and go from door to door giving presentations, explaining my product and the merits of selling my product. And then in the evening, I had a answering machine and, kind of booking requests would be waiting for me, hopefully. I would send those requests in the late afternoon to the cruise line, and then by the next morning I would have some confirmations. So that was really the kind of my business model and life cycle. Mm. Over the months, of course, it got a bit busier, so I could afford to hire an assistant. And it just grew from there.
Mm. And what skills would you say that you have that has made you the businessman that you are today?
Well, number one, I had a great passion for what I was selling. I could really put my name behind it.
Great.
And
nice. It
is a kind of product that you can never oversell. Because no matter what fancy words I can use to describe a cruise experience, ultimately when you go and experience it for yourself, it's 10 times better. So there was always that wow factor.
It's interesting how experience plays a part in all of this. So you were sent on an experience. There was a reluctance before and then energy after. And often you do. You have to get into the trenches, so to speak, in your... They were beautiful trenches in your case.
We would all like those trenches.
Yeah. But yeah. You have to get into the trenches and experience things, and experience is the great teacher often, isn't it?
I think experience is the ultimate teacher.
Mm. Mm.
I mean, you can do all the degrees and the postgraduate degrees you want, but you know, if you don't really put your feet in the mud, you won't really learn anything.
Mm.
So, yes. I mean, being out in the market and understanding the market and understanding the client's needs and the agent's needs and what their aspirations were and what the budgets are and the traveling patterns and all that, you know, made me more focused and more wiser. And, you know, especially with the political change in 94, a lot of the American-based cruise lines also wanted to be in the market. So we were at the right time to sign up a few more, and I mean, one or two of them are now the biggest cruise lines in the world. So, you know, we were at the right place at the right time in the market and with our expertise and our product. Of course, by the time I came to South Africa, I had been to many more cruises. I had really immersed myself in the industry while I was in Europe and in the United States. So I had a very, very good intimate knowledge and contacts. Which I brought here and started
able to
the business.
Were there low points though? So, because it sounds like there was almost this exponential rise in growth, but there must have been some low points. There must have been some experiences that you had to overcome that you learned from, but then also that you just tripped and fell on your face a few times. Do you have any of those kind of stories for us?
Not really, to be honest.
Oh, really?
No.
I mean, which is a remarkable thing. I mean, and I'm certainly sure you're grateful for not having to worry about that.
Of course, there were reservations that we kind of fell through the cracks, and there were mistakes. But we always stood by our mistakes. We always accepted them, and we always made the client feel that he actually the mistake not only corrected, but he got something out of it also.
Well, so there's the great lesson.
We have given a few cruises away because we really kind of stuffed up someone's reservation. You know what? That client, at the end of the day, becomes your client for life. And that is really...
I found
the most difficult clients, the one that abuse you and kind of talk down on you and they think they know everything. And the ones that we have, for some reason or other, kind of mishandled the reservation, and I must say, it doesn't happen often, have become opportunities for us to create bonds.
Life bonds.
Yeah. And the biggest challenge we have in my business is to convince someone who hasn't been on a cruise to take their first cruise.
Is it?
Because there's a set of resistances and misconceptions that we have to talk them through.
Mm.
But once they go on their first cruise, that's it. They become clients for life. And we are representing 9 brands at the moment. And the reason is because as the account, let's say, grows, we have different products and different experiences and lifestyles to offer throughout the lifetime of that customer. As I said, starting from honeymoon all the way into the 60s and 70s when you start doing the more exotic stuff like Antarctica and Japan and you know, ocean crossings and North Pole.
It sounds too good to be true, but let's talk about the educational space. So, you can tell us, what was your educational background preparing you for this? I know you said that it was lifelong experiences, but as young entrepreneurs, especially wanting to have a brand as fabulous, but yet generating lifelong consumer bases, how would we prepare ourselves for that kind of journey as entrepreneurs?
I don't think you do. You know, I mean, you start because firstly you need to earn a living. And if you don't want to be in the corporate world, you have to find something to do. And yes, I loved cruising and I saw a gap and I took it and I fulfilled my dream of running my own company. I never thought really that it was going to grow to the extent that it did. Mm. I mean, my dream was, you know, if I can sell 1,000 cruises every year, would be, you know, would give me a reasonably comfortable living. And maybe if I look at the looking back, I would have probably much sooner started thinking much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And why
that's
limit
exactly
myself to thousand? And I mean,
and that's exactly what. Sorry, George. That's exactly what our previous guest just said. Just she was younger. She would have taken more risks. Mm. Just screw it. Just do it.
No, of course, you know, it's very easy to look back 30 years and say, "Oh, I should have done this and I should have done
that."
But
it's amazing how so many people say the same thing, George.
You know, it depends on your background, and you know, we all carry a certain heritage from our parents, from our country, our environment, and all that. Mm. So, what probably I found most rewarding and enriching is how I could push my own envelope. And what sometimes we say that we are our worst enemy, it is absolutely true, because you have to relook at yourself and re-engineer yourself. And as I was saying, I got in touch with someone who became my great mentor in life.
Who is that?
He's Greek South African. His name is George Horiatopoulos. He runs the Self Development Foundation.
Wow. Mm.
So he really kind of looked at me and my business and says, "What nonsense is the 1,000? Says, "Let's put 5,000. I said, "You know, you're absolutely mad. You don't know the market. You don't know the product, the prices. Mm-hmm. Trust me." And before, I think, the 3 years that we set ourselves as a target to achieve it, we're already doing 6,000.
Mm.
So that kind of was a big kind of revelation to me that really, once you run your own business, the sky is the limit. And you don't only, not only look at the limitations of your geographical borders. I mean, you have the whole planet, especially with technology nowadays, to sell whatever it is that you're selling.
Who else would you consider as mentors, or who... as being the CEO executive of Cruise Internationals, who are the people that you aspire and admire and who drive inspiration for you and your business?
You know, unfortunately, I have to fall back to cliches, but
bring it.
Steven Jobs,
mm-hmm.
Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, and of course, you know, great revolutionaries like Nelson Mandela, Gandhi, Socrates.
What is it about these people?
You know, I believe you cannot be successful in life, whether it is in business or anywhere else, if you don't start from a very solid ethical base. And, you know, you have to have certain qualities. The people that will sit at a desk to think how they can make money by when, it's not a viable proposition. You don't start a business to make money. I mean, that's not your ultimate goal, or it's not the goal that you put as your guiding compass.
Your northern star.
You have to offer something, and I mean, there is a great definition of a salesperson, and it's someone who helps you make a decision that is good and beneficial for you.
Mm.
And that is really how I saw my role. I had a product that I truly believed that would enhance people's lifestyles and holidays, but holiday extends more into coming back refreshed and happy and content that you did something wonderful with your loved one or your family. And you're ready to tackle the world again.
I love that.
And I didn't have that. I wouldn't really. And I had many proposals to join businesses and think tanks in the past, but just I wasn't attracted by the product or by the philosophy of the people who wanted to start the business.
I really appreciate what you just said.
Yeah, the idea of moving your true north, your northern star, away from the money toward a true belief in what you're doing. I think that will stand out every single time. And so perhaps that's the answer to the question which I asked a little earlier, which was, why did people trust you? Why were people so convinced? And you, of course, jokingly said, well, my bubbling personality. But yes, your personality linked to your deep belief in your product.
I believed in my product, and I always believed in my word was my bond, and it still is.
Mm.
That's a very old school ethic, and we love that, you know? Mm. I mean, people who have been in the business box in a long time, you know, those old school with old school values, you know, really believe in commitment, and my word is my word, and that takes you a long way. That's intergenerational, actually.
It is, and I think the more technology and artificial intelligence and all that is progressing, the more I find there is a need for human contact and trust.
Mm.
And there is no trust in the world.
Absolutely.
So we give that. You know, when a couple will come into our office or we go to their home to talk about a cruise, the first thing is to create that trust, to believe that they can trust their dreams and their money to a team that will fulfill and go beyond their expectations. It's very rewarding for us.
I did introduce you as somebody who has described you as being a businessman of honesty and integrity, and you've just ticked your own box.
Yeah, and that's the only thing I had when I started, and probably the main thing that differentiates us from a lot of other companies out there.
Yeah.
There is, I mean, we're running almost short on time, so let's see if we can get some quick answers out of you. We call it our
quick fire questions. George.
So your three pillars of CEO leadership, what are they? Your three pillars. And I think you've described them as we've had this conversation, but let's solidify them. Your three pillars.
I would say provide motivation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Offer guidance, empathy, and support.
Okay, motivation.
In a nutshell, probably more, but that's what I think very quickly.
Guidance, motivation, support.
And vision.
And vision, yeah, very nice.
It's really to get people to do what they have to do, but also feel that they want to do it.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's the great art, is to get, and I forget who says it, one of these sages, the trick of leadership is to be able to get people to do what they sometimes don't want to do, something to that effect.
We'll
right.
get that quote.
Yeah, no, we will.
We'll find it. What was I going to say? Best advice you ever received.
Only 1,000. Let's go for 5,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, very, very good.
Very good. Okay. Your question.
Right. Phoebe always goes on about how leaders are readers. Do you have a particular book that stands out to you that made a difference as you have? Let me just jump back. There's an irony here. The irony is you never wanted to be part of a corporate environment. But then you go on to build a business, and that business invariably turns into what others might regard as a corporate environment. So just as you view yourself as a leader that has grown a business, what has been a book that has stood out for you?
Well, let me start with a book. The book that really stands out for me is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. It was written in the 1930s,
yeah.
And
yeah.
It's still as important and can't find the word contemporary today.
Yeah, it is very relevant. In fact, we have that on our website as a free download. So if you just see us /ebooks, you can get that book.
There's one book someone should read to start a business or start a journey in life in general, because it's not about the rich in terms of money. It's rich to enrich your life.
Very nice.
So you promised, and it's on record, that Future CEOs is going to record live broadcast on the cruises, so I stand by that. But George, Mr. Cruise SA, thank you for just inspiring and motivating me personally just to really take more risks and dream big, and the globe is your playground. So thank you so much for spending time with us right here in Future CEOs.
So certainly are also the messages that I've heard. Maybe because we've got one more minute with you, let's ask the question we ask all of our guests. If you can go back in time and speak to the future CEO you, you're a 20-year-old future CEO, you're talking to yourself, what do you say to yourself?
I would say exactly what Richard Branson would say. Screw it, let's do it.
Screw it, let's do it.
I think that's a good way to end the show. We're so very grateful for your time. We are looking forward to being able to just look forward, see how you grow, see how you're doing. We'll get you back on the show in a couple of years, and maybe that 10,000 just turns into 20,000.
A few months.
Fantastic. Thank you, George. We really appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
And we will see all of you same time, same place next week.
Bye bye now.
This is CliffCentral.com.